Welcome everyone to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thank you so much for listening, downloading. Appreciate it. On today's show, we've got two sports media reporters on separately. First up, from the Washington Post, sports media reporter Ben Strauss will talk about a variety of sports media topics, the Masters and CBS's coverage, ratings, TNT with Charles Barkley inviting LeBron on the Great Insight, the NBA. We get into the whole streaming thing, DAZN and ESPN Plus and what's going on there. Deadspin, and Ben wrote a feature on Deadspin back in February, and we talk about their evolution and sort of the Deadspin versus Barstool thing. So we do all that with Ben Strauss, and then following Ben, for all my New Yorkers and fellow WFAN historians and the Mike Francesa fans out there, Andrew Marchand, a regular on this podcast from the New York Post, joins us and gets into the whole Francesa Michael K ratings war and their fight and a whole bunch of other things. So it'll be Ben Strauss and then Andrew Marchand. Let me just tell you before we start, in the archives from last week, the podcast was Ray Ratto, a writer from the Bay Area who was phenomenal in talking about the sports media business. If anyone is in sports media, I urge you to listen to that. And Lauren Shahadi and Robert Flores from the MLB Network were on. So check that out. One non-podcast note I need to tell you about because it's important. Game of Thrones returned this week. I know many of you listen. Chris Long from the Eagles, two-time Super Bowl champion, and one of the best people to follow on Twitter, is writing weekly recaps slash columns on Game of Thrones every Monday on SI.com. His first column went up this week after the Game of Thrones return, episode 1, season 8. So Google, SI.com, whatever, Chris Long, Game of Thrones. Make sure you read it and check it out because it's a big deal and we're happy about that around here at SI.com. All right, now back to the podcast business. Ben Strauss and Andrew Marchand back to back. Here we go with Ben Strauss. All right, joining me now is sports media reporter for the Washington Post, Ben Strauss. Ben, how are you?
I'm great, Jimmy. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks for coming on. Figured we'd do some sports media chat here with, it was a big week for sports media. Obviously, the biggest story was the Masters, not only because Tiger finally won a major, but CBS had an interesting weekend with the coverage because of weather and then, of course, the ratings. One thing I found interesting, let's start here. CBS, I think it was today on Tuesday, they said they had 10.8 million viewers on television for the original telecast, 4.5 million viewers for the encore, which is pretty impressive. So that's 15.3 million total. I find it, you know, in this day and age, it's crazy to me that they don't include the streaming numbers still, because I have a feeling if you add in those streaming numbers, they're going to be monstrous for that tournament, considering it was on the weekend and then you had the Sunday morning aspect of it. What do you say about the number there for the Masters?
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of this transcendent event. And when the schedule came out and they're going to, you know, tee off at 7:30 in the morning, you go, who's going to be awake watching that at 7:30? And then, you know, Tiger has this incredible run, and by 2 o'clock, 2:15, 2:30, you know, the broadcast is peaking with, you know, a 12 rating, which is better than last year's peak, even though it was in prime time. And yeah. So it was, I think it sort of swung from, you know, what could have been, you know, a really tough day ratings wise to, you know, this incredible, you know, great story that CBS gets to tell. And obviously, you know, Tiger doesn't move the needle in golf. He is the needle. Mm-hmm. And so I think even better than yesterday, right? If you're in the golf business, you know, CBS didn't make money yesterday just because, you know, Tiger had this run. You're not selling ads on Saturday night knowing that Tiger's in contention. But next year, when, you know, you get to sell these Masters ads, you know, bake in the price with Tiger Woods back in contention. So if you're a network in the golf business, this was a big day.
Do you think this helps the ratings for the upcoming tournaments this year? The U.S. Open comes up in May. Do you think they get a bump from this, or is it, you know, wipe the slate clean and you have to see, you know, if Tiger's in contention, you know, on Saturday, Sunday?
Yeah, I think they start, you know, whatever the baseline is on Thursday, people watching Tiger, I think they start higher, and then if he's in contention, they keep going up. But no, I think if he doesn't make the cut somewhere, you know, the Tiger bump is gone. So I think it sort of rises and falls with Tiger, but, you know, you get to start in a higher place just because he's, you know, the biggest story in golf again.
Yeah. I'm sure ESPN, I'm sure CBS will send a release sometime soon with the streaming numbers. I'm very curious to see those streaming numbers. I think they're going to be huge.
Yeah, I think you're right, though. I think that it would be great if there was some sort of metric that, you know, did that sooner and did that faster, rather than having to wait for it. Because I think, you know, sports media and media consumption has evolved, you know, pretty dramatically. And, you know, it's pretty incomplete until you get that full number with the streaming numbers and just the number of people that, you know, aren't watching on linear TV anymore. That's sort of, you know, it's not the whole ball game, but it's enough of the ball game that you just don't have a complete picture of, you know, how many people watch something until you get those numbers too.
Yeah. Speaking of streaming, you recently for the Washington Post wrote a feature story on Adnan Verk, who everyone knows was fired by ESPN, and now he's at DAZN doing their baseball show. It might be a tough question for you since you wrote the story about Verk, but it's amazing to me. It's amazing for me to see how much coverage the Verk thing got, and how much coverage DAZN gets for a streaming service that's $20 a month. I know they have the boxing. I know John Skipper's there. And they have this nightly baseball show. What is ultimately the game plan, though, for DAZN? I mean, boxing and a nightly MLB show is not going to cut it for $20 a month. And ESPN, obviously, with their app, they have the big UFC deal now, and they have soccer on there and a bunch of other things. But I'm curious, since you wrote about Verk and DAZN, what's the ultimate game plan there for DAZN?
So I don't think there's any question as you sit here today, you know, $4.99 a month for ESPN Plus or $20 a month for DAZN, which, you know, bang for your buck is a better option. I think DAZN is interesting. I mean, obviously the answer is ESPN Plus for, you know, the amount of stuff that you get. I think DAZN is interesting for a couple of reasons. Number one, you do have John Skipper, you know, former ESPN head. He's a guy who understands press, knows how to get press. And people are interested in his story, sort of this comeback story, you know, sort of left ESPN in disgrace and sort of what is his next chapter since he was such a giant in the sports media, you know, industry for so long. So there's interest sort of in him personally. But DAZN, I think, carries a lot of curiosity because it is backed by this Russian billionaire named Len Blavatnik, right? And so you have different companies that are entering the streaming space, Flow Sports, you know, DAZN, you know, Bleacher Report is with Turner's entering in. But DAZN totally reset the market on boxing, right? They paid GGG, they paid Canelo Alvarez wildly more money than they were getting. And so they were able to reset the market in a way that, you know, people open their eyes and goes, whoa. They threw $300 million at Major League Baseball for this, you know, Red Zone-esque experiment that is essentially a proving ground to these other networks, or I'm sorry, to these other leagues as their rights come up. You think about Sunday Ticket and DirecTV might be up, or you think about, you know, maybe there's a Red Zone option for the NBA or the NHL. But really, with the amount of money that is behind DAZN and also their success, right? They're big in Japan, they're big in Germany. They're not like a startup, even though we haven't heard about them in the United States. So I think the combination of sort of the track record that they have and just the amount of money that they can spend and have spent makes them somebody that people in sports media are paying attention to.
I just don't understand the mindset of someone who would pay the $20. I mean, like you said, ESPN's app is $4.99 a month. They're giving you everything on that app. They're giving you shows. I know Katie Nolan has a show on there, and they do a couple of other things. Then they've got games. They got live games with the soccer, UFC. If you're a UFC fan, you have to have the ESPN app. They're going to put college football. They had that deal recently with the Big 12. I would love to. Maybe I should interview someone who subscribes to, who has the DAZN app instead of you. But like, what are you paying $20 a month for? I just don't get it.
Yeah, I think if DAZN can't build their library, and if, you know, this MLB show doesn't lead to more content with other leagues, more deals, then they won't go very far.
But why are you gonna...
I think you're sort of looking at the future of what this could be. You know, rather than like what kind of value are you getting for $20? I don't think it's particularly good value for $20.
I give ESPN,
you know, sitting here today.
Yeah, I give ESPN a lot of credit for keeping their app. I mean, listen, it'll go up eventually, but $4.99 is more than a fair price for what they give, I think.
Right, and I guess it'll probably be folded into Disney.
Yes.
The Disney Plus app, and that's what, like $6.99? So at least today, or when that goes on the market in November, that's a pretty good bang for your buck.
Yeah, that price was also surprising. Disney's giving you a lot of stuff there for $6.99. It's amazing this streaming world just keeps going and going and going. I don't know why.
But, I mean, at some point they're going to have to raise their prices because, right, they're not projected to make any money. YouTube TV doesn't make any money, so they just raised their prices. DirecTV Now wasn't making any money. They had to raise their prices. And so the economics of it, you know, are, you know, seem somewhat opaque to me. And, you know, you sort of imagine, you know, the great rebundling will come at some point where somebody goes, well, I don't want to pay $6 for this, $15 for this, $20 for this. It adds up, and it's more than my cable bill that I had for all those years that I tried to get out of.
This is like one of my rants that I keep going on lately. I just, at some point, something has to give. These companies worry about making money and raising prices, but what about the consumers? At some point, aren't you going to say, I have way too many subscriptions going on? Just keeps, you know, if ESPN gets folded into Disney, you have to have that app then if you're a sports fan. There's no choice about it. You know, I think you may end up getting close to a point where you have to have the Bleacher Report app, especially if you're a soccer fan. I don't think.
Yep.
So
if you want to watch the Champions League, I'm like the only millennial that misses my cable bundle.
I'm like one of the older people at SI. I'm probably like, I don't know, like for SI.com, I'm probably like the second oldest. And I talk about watching cable, and they look at me like I'm a complete alien, but I don't know. I like cable. I like my remote control. I like my TV. Sorry, I'm not changing. But, I mean, listen, I have, you know, Netflix. I have Prime. I have WWE Network. I'm not opposed to you can't have it all, can you? I mean, my God, it's so much out there.
And how much does it cost, right? At some point,
well, that's the
none
issue.
Of it is cost-effective, right? Because cutting the cord was... you know, at its core, about saving money.
Yeah.
And I don't know how far we are from, you know, saving money when you want to watch all this stuff anyway.
And it's still hard.
How much money are you saving, and you're getting a whole lot less than you used to get?
Exactly. Speaking of ESPN, I've noticed the last couple of days here they've been doing a little bit more with Peyton Manning. He has that. Speaking of ESPN Plus, he has that show there. I get the vibe that, you know, it's all a big work to get him on the Monday Night Football, because they also have said they don't have an announced team yet. I think they said that recently because the schedules are coming out or something like that. But what Peyton and ESPN, do we expect something there? Obviously no one knows what's in Peyton's mind, but it does seem like ESPN is working hard.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that there was sort of the conventional wisdom was that ESPN was going to make a pretty hard run at Peyton Manning, and he was going to say no. But if you're ESPN, I think you sort of have to make a hard run at him.
Right.
Because they're in a little bit of a tough spot, right? I think the Witten thing, you know, obviously the ratings were fine, but I think that the criticism that Witten took and sort of, you know, how difficult a time he had in that booth, you know, reflected pretty poorly on a network that really cares what people think and when sort of considers itself really the, you know, the sports leader, the worldwide leader in sports. And I also think that Witten was one of the first decisions that Jimmy Pitaro signed off on. So I think there's some personal responsibility that he feels in getting this next hire right. And this is the booth that they put together that they're going to the NFL with, and, you know, in conjunction with ABC and saying, we want a Super Bowl. And so I think that there's some pressure on them to get it right. And Manning sort of solves a lot of their problems. The question is, does he want to do it? And how much money do you have to pay him? I think ESPN would pay him whatever it took.
Right.
But I don't know where they go if he says no, and, you know, more likely than not when he says no.
The announcement today or yesterday was Peyton's going to produce and star in a 30-episode show about the NFL's 100 years of history, and it's a show exclusively on ESPN Plus. That, you know, Peyton's committing to 30 shows with ESPN just as an observer, not as a media reporter, but just as like the sports fan in me. Like, I see that and I'm going, he's going to Monday Night Football.
You think?
I think that's like a step towards getting him there. Just, I don't know that. It's not a reporting thing.
Is that like, you know, when the White Sox signed all of Manny Machado's friends and family in an effort to get him to the South Side, and then he said, yeah. No, I don't know. I think Peyton Manning would be fantastic. I think he'd be really good at the job. I do think that Tony Romo has sort of raised the bar on what is expected in that job too.
Right.
I think Manning would walk into it and, you know, like Witten, sort of fairly or unfairly, he'd be immediately compared to Tony Romo, which would be tough.
Yeah.
But I think ESPN wants him, and I think he would clearly be the best option if they can convince him to do it.
I want to change gears here and shift for a little. I think the best media story right now, I'm very into this, is the is Charles Barkley repeatedly inviting LeBron James to do Inside the NBA one night, and LeBron basically gave us a little tease on Monday by tweeting that he would consider it. Obviously, listen, that's the best studio show there is. Probably, you know, I'm partial to NFL Primetime as an all-time studio show, but if Inside the NBA is the greatest, I wouldn't argue with you if that was your opinion. I think it would be phenomenal to get LeBron on there, considering Charles has not always been so nice to LeBron. But I think LeBron on Inside the NBA with Chuck and Shaq and Kenny and Ernie Johnson would be phenomenal TV.
I do not have a counter take to that. I agree 100%. I don't see how anybody in the world who's ever watched sports television could disagree with that. LeBron is so good when he wants to be. Barkley might be the most valuable, you know, sports media TV personality in sports.
Might be.
And it would be great TV.
You know,
it would be must watch.
It's funny because I feel like, tell me if you agree or disagree. I feel like TNT, Turner, Charles can do whatever he wants. But outside of maybe saying something just completely off the rails, that would be, you know, whatever. Maybe something totally outlandish. But for the most part, Charles can do whatever he wants. And the result pays off because this show is phenomenal. It's amazing to me that more networks don't let their talent, give their talent that leeway to be, I mean, he's out there saying wild stuff every night. It's hysterical and people love it. You'd think other networks would pick up on it and, you know, not really try to rein people in, but it doesn't, you know, everything out there is a lot of cookie cutter stuff. This is not, and that's why it's successful.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody who couldn't. It was Barkley. I don't think it wasn't on TNT, but he went on a radio show and said, you know, he could beat any woman in any sport. Not like within the last few weeks, like during the NCAA tournament, I think.
Right.
And, you know, somebody said to me, if that had been anybody else, you know, people would have been calling for a suspension.
Yep.
But not Barkley. And it's the same in politics. There's like a level of authenticity. If people think they're getting authenticity, the, you know, the leash that people will give you, the space to sort of say outlandish things is immense.
Exactly.
And Barkley takes advantage of it and sort of delivers that authenticity better than anybody.
It's amazing. More networks don't understand that and let their people.
I think it's hard though, right? Like it's not that easy as the talent to be able to get away with it, you know?
Right. But the talent has to be prepared that they're going to take some heat if they say something crazy. But I think that's the benefit of Charles not being on Twitter. He doesn't have to deal with that. If Charles was on Twitter, he probably wouldn't say half the stuff he said.
That's true. Every time I go to send a tweet, I'm like terrified it's a bad tweet.
Right. Well, Charles just doesn't care either. I mean, that's a big factor in it as well.
Right. And I just wonder, how many people don't care that much and sort of, right? It's like this double-edged sword. In order to be that authentic, you have to not care.
Yeah. Well, I remember, I think Romo this year, didn't he say, he said someone was pissed off during a game and people on Twitter were complaining about that. And I was just like, oh God, please CBS, don't do the fake apology. Just let it go. I don't think they did. I give him credit. But, you know, you can't pay attention to what people on Twitter are saying when you're calling a game or doing a studio show. You just can't.
Or living.
Yeah, exactly. That's a whole other topic. But LeBron would be in a tough spot only because, you know, if he goes on there, he's going to get asked about the coach and the GM and his role in picking it. And he's not going to want to answer that. So I hope that doesn't stop him from doing it. But if they can get through that, I think he'd be great on that show for the little one-time offer.
I mean, it would be great for fans.
Yeah. I want to talk about you a little bit. So you are the, like I said, the media reporter for the Washington Post, who the Washington Post obviously does a phenomenal job with everything they cover. I'm just curious. I've looked at the features you've written. You recently did one on Deadspin, and I want to get into that. How do you pick your topics? Do you pick your topics? Do you have an editor? How do you come about on what you're writing?
We bounce ideas around. I get assignments from editors. My editor here is Dan Steinberg, who's a ton of fun to write for.
Because he's a former writer.
Blogger and columnist here. So we kick around ideas. You know, I have my own ideas. You know, I get stories turned down all the time.
Give me a story that you wanted to write that got turned down, like that you really wanted to write.
I don't know if there's any that I really wanted to write. There was one, I mean, and maybe they get turned down for a good reason. I think at some point I wanted to do a story about how, like, hockey PR, like, you know, I think this is, you know, sometimes The Athletic is a little bit of a controversial operation. There's sports editors who are not big fans of it at newspapers that have been poached and everything.
Right.
And I wanted to do a story that, you know, the one section of sports society that loves The Athletic more than anybody is NHL PR department because The Athletic covers the NHL.
Yes.
Even when nobody else does. So I don't know. That was one. So they're not always like great ideas, but that did not get greenlit.
It's an inside media story for sure, but it's valid. There's no doubt about it.
But no, I mean, I guess it's, you know, it seems, you know, it's not like the most insightful thing, but it's like, you know, what's going on that, you know, you would like to talk to somebody about, or what's going on that you would like to learn more about yourself. And then you sort of hope that readers and other people, you know, are interested, or you can tell the story in some way that interests other people. Sports media, I guess you probably run into this too. Like, sports media is interesting because, you know, like, I'll go out with my wife somewhere and somebody will be like, what are you working on? And I'll say, you know, well, did you hear about Adnan Virk? And people will look at me, you know, like I have three heads. Like, of course they haven't heard of it. Of course they, like, have never heard of DAZN, or they've never heard of Stadium. So it's like the people that it matters to, it, like, really matters to. And then it's a little bit harder to get a wider audience interested in, like, the minutiae of sports media.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's happened over the years, and it's definitely sort of the way it is now, is if you cover sports media, there's sort of two facets to it. There's the announcers, broadcasters, game reviews, ratings, that stuff. And then there's the business side of it with all this, like we talked about earlier, with the streaming and the apps and even just going through things you had recently written. You wrote something about Stadium, and the business aspect of it is not, I prefer the other part of it, the announcers and the broadcast and the telecast. Mm-hmm. The business is not sort of my thing, but you sort of have to know both in this day and age. Do you have a preference on which one you like to cover more or write about more?
Yeah, I enjoyed, you know, profiles of people, and sort of the personalities that are driving the business, whether they're in the booth or whether they're executives or whether they're, just journalists. I guess in terms of the broadcast, I think for me, and what I'm really interested in is sort of how we're going to watch sports in the future.
Right.
And I think the real growth of sports as a business has been fueled by television money. And as, you know, the television business changes and the media business changes, this is, you know, tectonic shift for how the sports end up operating.
Yep, absolutely.
And so I think, I sort of think of the media beat as sort of this business beat, but also this tech beat, in addition to sort of, you know, who's good on TV and who can you profile. And I think that's sort of what makes it so fun.
Yeah, the tech stuff has exploded, obviously. And then you factor in the legalized gambling and how that's going to affect that. And that's a huge part of the business now, too. I don't think it's as, I think it's a little bit overrated in terms of people thinking that all these new gamblers were going to be born. I never expected that. But in terms of programming and, you know, ESPN now has their gambling show, and that's an area that's just going to keep growing, growing, and growing.
Yeah. Do you think that, like, gamblers are going to tune into ESPN to get their gambling info? Or I sort of wonder about that. I think that people like the Action Network sort of have it figured out, where sort of like the hardcore gamblers are the ones that you're going to be able to make money off of.
Yeah. I mean, I do think that, if you're a hardcore gambler, I think most of your stuff's coming from the internet. There's no doubt about that. But I've seen ESPN's gambling show. I like it a lot. I don't love the format. I think they jump around a little too much. I like it. Like, I love the segments to be like, okay, here's our NBA, here's our MLB. They go,
yeah.
But it's a good show that gives you, if you're a hardcore gambler, you don't want someone telling you who to bet. You just want some information, and they give you information.
Right.
So I like it from that standpoint.
I also sort of wonder, like, you know, as sort of gambling evolves, I think we're going to get to the point where most gambling is, you know, done from inning to inning or batter to batter. You know, I can go on my phone and bet $5 on whether, you know, the batter I'm watching on TV is going to get a hit or not.
Right.
And so I wonder what that does to sort of bigger networks and larger sports media entities, you know, how they cover gambling when a lot of the betting, you know, is quicker and more advanced than, you know, what we're seeing today.
Yeah. I don't think the media has a grasp on how to cover it yet. I think it's still evolving. I mentioned back in February, you wrote a big feature on Deadspin and how they've changed over the years. I'm curious, were you surprised about anything did you learn anything in terms of what your impression of Deadspin was and then reporting that story, what you think of it now? And because obviously it's completely different than what it used to be. I mean, there's been different sort of evolutions of it, where it started with Will Leach and then it was AJ DeLorio, and now we have the regime that's there now. What was your big takeaway from reporting on Deadspin?
That's a good question. I think the piece sort of focused on, like, the difference between, like, Deadspin, you know, circa, like, 2007, 2008, 2009, and Deadspin today. Because I think Deadspin has sort of been, you know, a more progressive voice for a while now. I don't think that just happened, you know, with Meg Greenwell. And so I think it's sort of the difference between, you know, the site that, you know, made its name and made its bones, you know, publishing, you know, pictures of athletes behaving badly and, you know, Brett Favre dick pics and stuff like that to, you know, the site and sort of the voice it is today. And I think The most interesting way I think I was put it, I think the site has grown up. And I think it's, you know, regardless of what you think of their content, I think it's pretty crucial. I think sports media is better for having, you know, when Deadspin is around and Deadspin is good. And I think they do keep a lot of people honest in sports media. Whether they do it righteously or self-righteously, I think is sort of in the eye of the beholder. But I do hope that their new ownership invests in them and that they do continue to be, you know, a place that publishes good stuff.
I think one of the interesting things too is there seems to be this like Deadspin, Barstool Sports, I don't know if war is the right word, but and they're just so completely different. It's weird to me that they'd be thought of almost in the same, they're websites, but other than that, it's not many similarities.
Yeah, I think Deadspin, I guess one way to describe Deadspin or that it was described to me is sort of they went from a place that wanted sports to be taken less seriously. Right. That was sort of, you know, an original ethos of theirs. You know, and there are people now who suggest that they want, or you can read their content and they want sports to be taken more seriously.
Yeah.
And Barstool is sort of the place where they want sports to be taken not seriously at all.
Also, they get
and so I think that's sort of an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, I also think one of the interesting things in the whole Barstool thing, you know, they are called Barstool Sports, but I mean, I would say sports is probably like 50% of what they do. I mean, they're more of a comedy site than a sports site, I think, and at least that's how it's evolved. But I mean, sports is the base there, but they're far from a sports site.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think I talked to Dave Portnoy before the piece, and I think he described them as like a sports comedy site that was sort of baked into how he envisions the site. So I think that's totally true.
So before we wrap up, I got to ask you, you're in Washington. I assume you're in Washington. I mean, I shouldn't assume that, but is that accurate?
Yes, yeah. In D.C.
Do you care at all about Mike Francesa?
I care about Mike Francesa when I read about him in Andrew Marchand's tweets.
Right.
I think what's interesting about Francesa is you have this sort of guy who was like the king of sports media in the 1990s and kind of set the agenda for sports in the biggest city in the country. And he's diminished and sort of like how that happened and why that happened and sort of what he is today versus what he was is fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're in luck because right after you, we have Andrew Marchand talking about Mike Francesa. So
nobody knows more about Francesa than Andrew Marchand.
Yeah. So this podcast was made for you. Thanks for coming on and talking about some sports media stuff. I appreciate it and love to have you on again sometime.
It was awesome, man. Long time listener, first time caller.
I appreciate that. Thanks. Appreciate it. Take care, Ben.
See you, man.
Okay. Bye-bye. All right. Before we get to Andrew Marchand of the New York Post, let me tell you that this episode of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast is sponsored by Lightstream. You know what feels great? Paying off high-interest credit cards, getting a lower rate, and saving money. You can refinance your credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. Get a fixed rate as low as 6.14 APR with AutoPay. Get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000. There are no fees. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Plus, Lightstream is a division of SunTrust Bank, one of the nation's largest financial institutions, so you can have complete peace of mind when you use Lightstream. Want to save even more? My listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/SIMedia. That's lightstream.com/SIMedia. lightstream.com/SIMedia. This is subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/SIMedia for more information. And now let's get to Andrew Marchand from the New York Post. Joining me now, had to have him on because Monday all hell broke loose in New York City over the sports talk radio wars, Mike Francesa and Michael Kay. So we've got Andrew Marchand, who's in the middle of these wars at all times, from the New York Post, media columnist, media reporter, think something else. I'm not sure the other title. And frequent SI Media podcast guest joins us right now. Andrew, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Jimmy.
I could not think of a better person to have on today, Andrew. All right. There's two things I want to sort of get into. There's the whole ratings thing, which is a big fuzzy thing. And then the aspect that fascinates me way more than this is the Funhouse role in all this and FAN's position on this. Let's start with the ratings. So here's the deal for the New Yorkers out there. If you're not from New York, you probably have tuned out. I hope you're still here because it's a good media story. But quick background, Mike Francesa on WFAN, Michael Kay is on ESPN Radio in New York, local affiliate. The ratings came out Monday, that had Michael Kay beating Mike Francesa 5.9 to 5.5 in the last winner book, Men 25 to 54 Years Old. Correct me if I say anything wrong here, Andrew. That number is Michael Kay's radio show plus the streaming on the ESPN app against Mike Francesa's radio show only. If you factor in the streaming of Mike Francesa's show and you make it radio show plus streaming against radio show plus streaming, Mike Francesa beats Michael Kay 6.2 to 5.9. Now, there's other things going on. Michael Kay is on Yes, and Mike has his app for $9 a month. We don't know how many people subscribe. We know it's more than 300. And that's where we stand. Michael Kay took a victory lap. Mike Francesa took a victory lap. For me, no dog in the fight. I've said this a million times. I stopped listening to Mike long ago, and I'm sad at what his show has become. To me, that's a Mike Francesa victory. Now, you're going to say what, Andrew?
Well, I think we'd all like it to be a clean victory one way or the other. It's much easier to write. It's much more interesting. And just people who are trying to understand it, who aren't in radio, can just say, this person won, this person lost. What I said in my story is that ultimately, when you look at these results, it's a virtual tie. And so that's kind of the main story, is that Francesa's BK, for as long as they've been going at it, and for years that was 660 versus 1050, and you couldn't hear 1050, so it wasn't much of a battle, beyond what you think of the shows. But so when you look at it, that's the takeaway. Now, who won exactly? That's where there is a disagreement, with Kay's show and ESPN celebrating a victory and Mike saying that's totally incorrect. I won 6.2 to 5.9. So what it comes down to is it's not really clean for either side, because the reason that people like me write 25 to 54-year-old males, that demographic, is because that's what sports radio stations, they sell their advertising against. And so the number that FAN and ESPN sell their number against is the original 5.9 to 5.55 number. So that historically is why we use that number. That said, I think it's a fair point to say, well, they're counting streaming. We're not counting streaming. If you're FAN, you should add that in. Mike noses ahead 6.2 to 5.9. Now you're saying, who's more popular? So then we're changing what we're kind of going on. We're not doing the historical advertising thing, which is an industry standard of what it's been. Right. And we're saying, well, we should count the streaming. That makes sense. But then you get into a slippery slope. So if you're going to say we're not doing it by what you're selling advertising against, then should you factor in that FAN has two signals, which is significant because you have FM and AM. Mike's audience skews a little bit older, which favors an AM audience. So is that the difference because he has the extra signal?
Yeah, but that's just an excuse. That's not – the numbers are what the numbers
really,
are.
Though, because we're trying to – because in the articles, you're trying to say which show is more popular. Like the reader, when you're reading my story
– I disagree.
You don't care what they're selling advertising against, nor do I.
I disagree.
But you're trying to say which is more popular. So wait, but then if you're going to say which is more popular, then shouldn't you be including Yes in that? You know, because if you're trying to say which show is more popular and Mike's app in that, in terms of which is more popular, I get it. Mike doesn't have a TV outlet at this point, and so that's not necessarily apples to apples. So it's not clean. And so that's why what my original statement was, what the real takeaway is, it's a virtual tie. which is what 5.9 to 5.55 is and 6.2 to 5.9 is. And here's the other factor that, let me just put in there, is that when you look at it, Nielsen does an estimate of, you know, of how they come to the rating. So it's not as if like someone's touching home plate and it counts as a run. It's an estimate of what the numbers are, and it's a little bit of an archaic system to use, even with the streaming, which you could easily count, you know, physically. The stations know how much streaming they do because it's digital. They do it as a forecast. So when you look at it, if you really want the takeaway is nobody really won, and it's a basically a tie. But, you know, obviously they look at the numbers differently. ESPN put out a press release, and Mike said what he said about that he won. So that's where we stand.
Okay, but here's what I would say to that. A couple of things. I agree with you that if you want to get into total audience, you should factor in yes, which Michael Kay is on. And you should factor in total audience in terms of radio. You guys always give the rating of 25 to 54. Do you have or can you get total listeners and not just 25 to 54?
Yeah, you could do 12 plus, which it means that, and this is, you know, common with a lot of radio stations use, which is people 12 years or older, male or female,
right.
And what that audience
That's
is.
That's what it
and
should be judged
point,
on. If when you mentioned before about popularity, if you just want to go popularity, that's what it should be. First of all, women should be included. It's absurd that they're not. The streaming should be included because it's 2019 and that's how people listen to things. And like you said, 12 and over is how it should be. And, you know, even the cutoff at 54, I mean, there's plenty of people, but I would say even probably the majority, who listen who are over 54 to the radio these days. So, like you said, I agree with you.
I've had this discussion with Neil Best at Newsday, who's the other one who mainly covers this, along with Bob Raisman from the Daily News, is that, we could change how we, we're not going to do this. I don't think I'm going to do this because this is how it's been done historically and to change the rules. It's going to cause more issues. You know, I don't care about sides getting mad and I got both sides, you know, actually, you know, everyone, most, I heard from both sides saying I was fair, but, you know, not from all of them, not from everybody from both sides, but from people who are important. And the bottom line is that, you're right. I think 12 plus is fair, but then again, you still have the factor of FAN having two signals compared to ESPN having one.
That's a way bigger deal to you than me. I don't think that's really a big deal.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay, you don't think it helps to have two signals where you're reaching people on two different sets of dials? Of course it helps. I mean, it's hard to say how much it helps, but
I doubt that's a difference maker.
Two different signals on FM and AM. That's definitely an advantage.
I doubt that's a difference maker. I think we agree on, if you want to talk popularity, you got to include everybody, include yes, include Mike streaming. But getting back to the original point, if you're just going by radio listeners, in my opinion, just my opinion, it's 2019. You have to include streaming. And if you include the streaming, more people on the radio listen to Mike Francesa than Michael Kay. That's my only point.
Okay, I've talked to both sides in anticipation of this for a total of 2 hours last Friday, and talked to independent people. I've called Nielsen. I've done a lot of research to try to figure out what's fair, and you know, there's good points for both sides, but I think ultimately when you come down to it, the way it's set up, it's not necessarily, you can't really do apples to apples. There's other factors too with these ratings where you look at it and there's advantages for example, in the spring, Mike's going to have the advantage of having Yankee games in the afternoon, which will draw because of your buddies, John and Susan, and also the games will draw big ratings and that will help them. And that's, to me, that's fair game. That's like, you know what, if ESPN cries about that or says anything about that, you know what? FAN did the deal to get the Yankees, and it helps Mike, so he deserves those points.
Right, and they also
bring up when he's off.
Right, exactly.
If you take days off, then you take days off. That's your problem.
Right, exactly.
And also, by the way, when he took the days off and they had Evan and JJ, from what I'm told, the ratings stayed the same. So he didn't get hurt there.
I'm going to ask you a question, but you don't have to answer because I'm going to put you in a tough spot. If you're Michael K. Monday, would you have cake and champagne to celebrate your victory?
I'd probably wait till it's a cleaner victory. Yeah. Now ESPN is adamant. Here's the thing: ESPN is adamant that they won, and this is how it should be recorded. It's always been based this way, and so it has been a long time. Look, the easiest thing, and trust me, either way, I would have preferred one side to win with streaming and without streaming. It's just simpler, and
right, it should be
clear cut. Right. This is the winners. This is what it means. This is the story. So to answer your question, in their mind, they're the champs. It's been a long time coming, and so I think they can enjoy it however they want. And quite honestly, it ended up creating more entertainment with the two sides going at it even more. So I think cake and a champagne was good, and you know, in terms of for people listening. And secondly, I heard it was a tasty cake.
The person who put the icing on the cake should have done a prank and put 6.2 to 5.9 on the cake.
I don't know if that would have gone as well with that audience.
If you're ESPN, who basically wants to spend 24 hours a day getting people to pay $5 for an app where they can stream stuff, I think you got to include streaming numbers in your radio shows. And to say that Mike's streaming numbers don't count in 2019, where everyone's listening on phones,
Jimmy, you're not understanding though the difference though is that. But then you're saying which show is more popular?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if you're going
to. But if you are, though, you're saying which show is more popular?
No, which show is
based on what they sell advertising against? Which I'm not saying you're not right. You might be right, but
no. Okay, so you want to say okay?
It's not apples to apples. But then FAN has two signals. So I mean, is that apples to apples?
No, that's nonsense. The bottom line is this: as Mike likes to say, listen, it is apples to apples. It's streaming plus radio. That's it. We're not talking about anything else. In the 25 to 54 category, streaming.
I got it, but then you're saying more popular.
I didn't say more popular. Look, you keep saying that.
I really don't. I get it. You know,
let's move on.
Social media, you get it either way. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter to me.
Let's move on.
For me, I root for the Post.
Yeah, let's move on. Yeah, exactly. It's good for business. That's what I said in my column on Tuesday.
There you go.
It's all good for business. Speaking of good for business, once again, Mike Francesa decided to dispute something you wrote by confirming what you wrote when you said that he had a blow up in the hallways of WFAN, and he basically confirmed that he did. What can you tell me about the blow up, as I think you put it, in the hallways?
Yeah, temper tantrum. He got very boisterous at the president of Entercom's regional network, Susan Larkin, who's basically, in theory, Mike's boss, and then Mark Chernoff, longtime VP at WFAN, who's pretty legendary in his own way, with having worked on Howard Stern and IMUS. And so he screamed at them, and it was over the whole Craig Carton thing. And he said on the air, you know, he went into further detail. He did confirm the story, which I appreciated greatly on the air, but he did go into further detail that, you know, he felt like they lied to him, which I didn't have in the story, but he felt like they lied to him and that they said that he was the first choice to interview Carton. And then he later found out that it was Boomer, and he was upset about a retweet that the morning show had made of something I tweet out, which is a simple tweet about what Boomer said on the air in regards to why they weren't having Craig Carton on post-sentencing. And so he was upset about that. He felt like the morning show had been played by Carton because they'd all written letters in support of Carton to try to lessen the amount of prison time he would have. And then he went on the rival station. I think part of it is Mike could have had that interview. And, it did cause a buzz. If you look at Mike's show, he hasn't really caused much of a buzz besides what you get from, you know, back after this on Twitter with, the things that he says that are incorrect and, you know, then denies it and that kind of stuff. And so
you mean those doctored videos?
Yeah, the doctors. Yeah, yeah, the doctored videos. Yeah. The Kay's show has, you know, they've, whatever you think, has had Jim Dolan, had Carton, and had Lenny Dykstra. And those have been, if you look at radio, those have been the big three interviews of the, you know, last, you know, few months, probably, you know, in this calendar year for sure. And so, Mike's going to say that he didn't want Carton and maybe that's true, but I think he might have regretted the decision. He'll deny that, of course.
It says a lot about how horrible we are as a society when the three biggest interviews are Jim Dolan, Len Dykstra, and Craig Carton. My God. I mean, that is as depressing a statement as I've ever heard in my life. I mean, you're talking about...
I think, again, that's a little hyperbolic. I don't think it's that bad.
Lenny Dykstra... you know what? I don't even want to get into it. But
yeah, but Jim, but you know what the thing is, though? What is sports radio? It's a spectacle. That's what sports... That's why Mike's successful, you know, to this day. It's a spectacle. It's a release from your normal day, and you want to turn on the radio,
Dolan,
and find out about something that's not as...
I'll just say
you know,
this. Can
typical
I,
as your life.
Dolan is a legit interview. Obviously, he's a horrible guy, but legit interview. I think the Carton one is debatable. I'll ask you about it next. I mean, to put Lenny Dykstra on, you're just, I mean, degrading yourself at this point. I mean, this is a really bad dude, but whatever. Forget that. If you were Mike, would you have interviewed Carton?
If I were Mike?
Yeah, he turned down the interview.
Personality or me? Like, it depends on your personality.
Do you think...
If it's me...
Do you think...
To me, look, I know what you, I think, either tweeted or you... had your column about in terms of that you know you wouldn't do the interview.
Well,
you're
no,
crazy.
It's
a legit interview. It's a good interview. Should Mike have done it? I mean, there's history there.
Wait,
and you know,
about...
he's very insulting, and they didn't like each other, and Craig made things up about people, and so I can understand someone not wanting to put that. Now, in terms of radio,
wait,
though,
you have to let me fire back because you said something that's totally wrong.
Yep.
There's a big difference between me doing a podcast on SI. And Mike Francesa and Michael Kay doing radio in New York. Me, as a podcast host for Sports Illustrated, I have zero interest in ever interviewing Craig Carton. And I have, and if they came to me, I would say no. And if that's me doing a podcast for SI. Now, if you're on radio in New York, that's a whole different story. And if you are a radio host in New York, you probably should do the interview. But even if you do it, in my opinion, because if I was a host at FAN or ESPN Radio, yeah, I would do it. But I'd need a shower after, and I'd feel dirty. That's just me. I'm not saying everyone else should feel that way. Now, but why?
I don't understand.
Because Craig Carton has said. Let me spin it this way, my answer. I have a massive amount of respect for Mike saying no to that interview because Craig Carton has shit on Mike for years on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And then you're going to go put him on your show? You have to have a little self-respect.
Yeah, no, I think you could look at it that way.
Right.
That's
so,
what I'm saying.
And then
but
you add in.
I thought we were talking about if it's a legit interview.
It's a legit interview.
Is it a legit interview? Yeah, it's a legit interview.
Well, no, well, it depends because. I didn't see it or hear it. I saw some tweets about it. I mean, he from what I can read, and I should look at it to make my own judgment, it does sound like it was more of a... I didn't see any tweets saying he seemed contrite. He seemed like he was a different guy. The tweets I saw were, you know, he was still taking shots and still, you know... I mean, the story itself is bizarre because he gets arrested... denies this whole ticket scam, but that ended up being true. Then he's blaming it because he was sexually abused, but then he says he has a gambling problem. I mean, it's a crazy story that has, you know, that changed a lot. And I just think if you're a New York radio host, yeah, you should put him on because everyone in New York will listen. But I think between what has happened with him in this whole scandal, and then you add in the fact that he has ripped Mike and has ripped 98.7 ESPN on a, I mean, not here and there, on a constant basis. Me personally, I would say no, thank you. That's me.
Okay. I mean, I guess I don't, hey, look, it's a legit interview. I mean, do I think, I thought that interview was better than the Dolan interview for the Kay show because, and it's also because Carton's very good on radio. I mean, he's dirty and he'll say anything. And it's besides the fact that he's a felon now, is that he would, you know, he would say anything about anybody, and he didn't care if it were true or not, which is disgusting.
Well, that's why I wouldn't put him on. That's exactly why I would not want to interview him. Dolan owns two teams in New York. You have to put him on.
Say it again?
Dolan owns two teams in New York. You have to put him on. It's not. That's not even an issue, Dolan.
Yep. Yeah, you don't have to put Craig Carton on, but he's a major sports figure in over the last decade since he and Boomer replaced Imus, and so he's going to prison. He wants to go on the air, and you know his motivations. I don't know if that was the best move to go on the air at that point, but if he does want to go on the air and wants to tell his story, it's compelling radio, which you're trying to do. And I know that some people, well, it's terrible. He's going to prison. Yeah, that's true. And if you want to try to be and say, like, well, are you doing any public good, as if that's really the goal of sports radio, which I don't believe is necessarily.
Right.
I mean, it's entertainment. But if you say, well, he had a gambling problem, and in theory, I'm not sure if we heard this, but in theory, when he went on the show, he could have been a message for others, you know what, don't follow his path. Now, I would agree that having listened to it, he didn't sound as contrite as you think maybe he might have, considering he's going to prison for 3 years.
That's all Pollyanna stuff anyway. No one listening to Craig Carton do an interview on the radio is going to stop gambling if they have a gambling problem. I mean, that's so unrealistic. It's ridiculous. There was no good. He was not going to serve any good or give out a message. He's a sports talk radio host who went on a show to do an interview. No one who's a degenerate gambler is going to say, oh, let me not bet the Yankees minus 220 tonight because Craig Carton told me it has this problem.
Somebody doesn't get involved. Because I'm not saying that's
the guy, the gambling, because
if you're trying to make it more than just it's compelling radio, then that's your argument. I'm not saying that you don't have him on because your job is to make compelling radio, and yes, this guy has committed a crime and he's going to jail, but it's a very interesting story that most people would want to have, and you know, he did a big piece with the New Yorker, and you know, they told his story as well. So I don't really have a problem with
that's fine
with them putting him on. I can understand why Francesa would not, you know, would choose not to. I can understand the reasoning that you made.
Okay, good discussion, good debate. I enjoyed it. Last one before we go. Funhouse. I wrote this in my column again on Tuesday. I think we may have even touched on this before. I am surprised more, you know, the Racemans, the best. I think you've done it. It's a fascinating media story in that FAN could get it shut down in 30 seconds because of copyright issues. They don't. And that shows, I think, a little bit of desperation. Now, the flip side too is if they did get it shut down, Twitter would revolt. So FAN is in a tough spot. Have you ever heard anything, you know, behind the scenes, off, you know, in your reporting? Has FAN ever just talked about whether they should get it shut down? Do they consciously?
Well, they did shut it down at one point. It was a kind of mistake.
But they did that before the app.
They rectified.
I think they did that before the app. Now the app has the video, and the video makes everything so much worse.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, I'm sure. I don't know firsthand that they've discussed it, but I would assume that they have. And I think they feel like it's better for business that Mike's in the social realm, and it's something you couldn't do in house because he's goofing on them.
Right.
And so they're just not gonna produce that. You know, from you know, Tom Izzo, who runs their digital, is not gonna produce that in house.
Right. And that's the fascinating angle of it. They have decided to let it go because they want the publicity, but the publicity is Mike's bad predictions, Mike's half truths, and that's being generous, Mike being nasty to callers. It's fascinating that they'd rather have that out there on a daily basis. I mean, forget all the prediction stuff and all that. Everyone makes bad sports predictions. I'm not, you know, obviously Mike goes to another degree with it. But how about the thing last night? I put it in the column where Mike says the Tiger Woods' caddy is not allowed to do interviews. And then he's on Michael Kay's show and Chris Russo's show. I mean, that's the stuff where if I'm FAN, I can't believe they don't. That's the stuff that I can't get over.
Yeah, I find that stuff kind of sad, quite honestly.
Right.
I mean, like, it's like not, I don't know. I don't really, it's not back after this. It's not his fault. I think he does a very good job, and he's just it's interesting. And he is a fascinating story. He's anonymous and does not want to speak. I mean, I've quoted him, once before in a story when I think when they shut it down and then they put it back up. So he's an interesting story. If you ever were to speak, I know you tried to reach out and get him on the podcast.
Yep.
And he doesn't want to do any of that stuff. Which is fine. But I think, in terms of FAN, it's good publicity. Now, sometimes the clips aren't all negative. It's sometimes Mike going off on somebody that he finds that's a positive. Yeah. But for the most
part, overall,
it's Tiger Woods, zilch, in terms of his chances at the Masters. Virginia has no chance to win the championship. It's embarrassing stuff. And I think, they think it's a net positive, I would assume. Or they could get it shut down and Twitter would revolt. I do think a lot of people do. They don't listen to the show anymore, and they just check out Funhouse.
Well, and they say it's gold,
which people love.
Right, of course. And this is the ultimate problem with Mike. The problem with Mike is not that he says Virginia's not going to win the title. It's that Mike then says, I never said it, and the video's doctored. That's what the problem is. The other thing about Funhouse, which is interesting, is, yes, I did reach out. I wanted him to come on the podcast this week. He said no. But he wants the account to get shut down, which makes this whole thing even more bizarre.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That is the thing. He said he hates the show,
right?
But so many people get so much joy out of it, he continues to do it.
And he wants to get shut down.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's if crazy. I were him, I think I'd just be like, all right, I'm good. I don't know. He doesn't. Does he really need to do that?
I think. I don't know. That's why I wanted to have him on the podcast.
Sure. He's a full-time job.
Yeah. Well, that's why I invited him on. All right, last question, and then we're going. Does Mike stop the app, quit FAN, keep both, do both? What's the prediction?
Now, this is always like when I cover the Yankees. Who's going to win this playoff series? I'd like to tell you, I guess you're asking me predict. And so I would say that most likely he stays doing this. Like, we're talking the next year, right? We're not going.
Yeah.
For the next year, does the show, the app somehow transforms into somewhat like, part of FAN or some sort of different element to how they present the app would be my prediction if I were to make one. But to be clear, I'm not reporting anything on that. I'm just saying if I were to predict, I would say it's more like them, and maybe add some sort of sidekick. Maybe JJ's in there. Maybe Minko sits in for a little bit. Other people for hours, at some of it. The problem is he works from home a lot. So that's awkward for the video on the app, where you have one guy, supposed to be in the home studio, and then you have the other guy because he's at FAN. So that's something they'd have to work out. I don't think he's just going to walk away because he did that once. He found, though he lies about it, there wasn't really much out there for him in terms of the magnitude that FAN can provide him. And so I think he knows better that if he does that, that's it. That there's not something else out there. He does the app and he's pretty much irrelevant, if he's doing that. And so I don't think he'll walk away easily.
All right. Good answer. Thanks for the spirited debate. I enjoyed it as always.
Thanks, Jimmy. I appreciate it.
We'll have you on soon again. Take care.
All right. You too.
All right. All right, my thanks to Ben Strauss of The Washington Post, Andrew Marshan of The New York Post. I think the New Yorkers out there will enjoy the spirited debate. Did enjoy the spirited debate between me and Andrew. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the SI Media Podcast. It's very important. Check out the archives. A lot of good interviews in there. Check out Chris Long on SI.com with his Game of Thrones review. That's important. And again, let me reiterate, subscribe. Appreciate it. We'll see you next week right here on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Take care.